Hey, now we can start podcasting.
Wait, I'm stuck.
Dad, how did you manage that? It's a good thing.
I have become magnetic.
Oh,
It's
do
something I've been trying.
So it wasn't like you were born with a mutant superpower, you just developed it through.
I sleep on magnets with,
Okay.
like, don't you, can't you like make a paperclip magnetic by like rubbing it on a magnet and then it makes other things stick to it?
Wouldn't that make like the iron in your blood go all weird?
Well, we'll see.
You do look kind of pale.
Wouldn't that make the iron in your blood go all weird? It's this new theory, I'm going for like really broad concept-based theories to solve problems.
Using anecdotes to plan your science.
Yeah, I feel like that's a good strategy for choosing a new health practice or writing a book.
Yeah, exactly. You start off with the theory that sounds the most interesting.
And then you say, let's run with
Let's make everything fit with this. Behold
it.
my magnetic body.
Yes, or behold the origin of consciousness.
There we go. I think that's a good place to start.
My name is Christiane,
And I am Greg.
and we have had a book club for about a decade.
I think we're going on like 12 years now.
And at the sad loss of David Bowie in 2016, we decided to get our act together
Yep.
and start reading through the list of 100 most influential books that David Bowie had listed. And we're reading them in no particular order.
In fact, a completely nonsensical order.
And making wild speculation about them as we go.
Yes, and in some cases, the book ends up being much wilder than any speculations we could come up with.
Yeah.
I think this is one of them.
I feel as though we have no imagination compared to Julian Jaynes.
Yes. So I'm gonna completely punt on this and make you describe what this book is about.
Oh, man.
And who this fellow Julian Jaynes is.
Well, based on my notes, so Julian Jaynes was a psychologist,
A playwright?
and he lived in, he was a playwright and actor for a while.
In England, yeah.
Yeah, and then he returned to the United States where he had done his schooling,
Yep.
and then he was a psychologist.
Right, I think he taught in eventually got his degree from Princeton, if I remember right.
I say Yale.
Yale? He has the boorish manners of a Yalie. But it sounds like he had like a kind of speckled academic career where he took forever getting his PhD and then I think only ended up getting like an honorary one after the publication of this book, The Origins, and this is a doozy, The Origins of Consciousness in the Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind, which, that just screams bestseller, right? A title like that. But
Yeah, it does.
in fact,
Actually,
it
it was.
does. Is yeah, this book was a huge hit, despite the fact that it was a supposed scientific treatise about consciousness. It still managed to strike some sort of nerve with
So
American readers.
I was just looking at your friend Wikipedia's page.
I know, he's great, right?
Yeah, he's pretty knowledgeable.
He's got something for everything.
And he says that Julian Jaynes got his PhD at Yale University pretty
Damn.
quickly. Like, let me see. He was born in. Get ready to do math.
Okay.
Ready?
Oh, this is my worst. I'm not good
So
at this.
Julian Jaynes was born in 1920, and
72 years old.
and
No? Oh, okay.
he got his PhD in 1948.
28, not
Yeah, so
bad,
it wasn't
right?
bad.
Yeah.
So he didn't put it off. He actually then went and became an actor and a playwright, and then came back and did his work with psychology.
Wow, okay.
So I think that actually gives perspective. So this was kind of a weird book to become a bestseller, but it was a bestseller. It sold out of its first printing.
Yeah, and it's still in print.
Yeah, and it was even nominated for the National Book Award in 1978, which was three years after it was published. 2 years, because it was 76.
I told you I can't do math. You're on your own for this.
So I think that transition that he became a writer in between makes a lot of sense, because it was an enjoyable book to read in that respect, if you look at it as like literary theory or a fun storytelling process.
Like, the way I would describe this book is that it's exactly what you would expect to read as a liberal arts major in college.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just crazy speculation that kind of draws in all these different disciplines.
And you're all going to sit around in the coffee shop and be like, light another cigarette. Yeah, totally. How do you know that the yellow that I'm looking at is the same yellow that you're looking at, Greg?
This is the professor that buys you weed. And then tells you about his crazy theory for hours on end. I mean, and it does, like, I'm a sucker for crazy theories. Like, I live by them. Like, I just want something that wraps everything up neatly. Even if it doesn't make sense, I'm willing to ignore the holes in any theory that sounds good.
Maybe that's why I had a harder time than you did with this one.
Because of your natural intelligence and lack of gullibility? As opposed to my complete naivete.
You just want it to be neat.
I know. I just want what I ask for in a theory is you tuck in the edges, hospital corner style.
Mm-hmm.
You just make it look good. I don't care what's going on underneath.
And he did that a lot better than the guy we read last year at this time, Colin Wilson.
Oh, yeah,
The Outsider, which was another kind of hairball theory that... He just...
Wait, a hairball theory?
You know, like, you're just, like, coughing up hairballs, and then...
You're like, this looks good, right? This makes sense.
What is it? Spitball theory.
Okay, that's not much better.
Because he actually... Julian Jaynes does have... some rigorous investigation, though it's mostly literary criticism.
Yeah.
And
so like his premise is...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We should try to do this. This is tough.
I wrote down Imaginary Friends by Cameral Westworld Acid.
Okay, that pretty much sums it up. I have a Blade Runner, Snow Crash, Vince Taylor, and... Make America by Cameral again. So hopefully that's instructive to you, the listener,
done.
About what this book is about. Okay, let me give it a shot.
Yeah.
Actually, I wrote down something earlier today that I think might make sense, or at least will give you something to correct.
Okay, ready? Go.
Okay, consciousness evolved from language in order to keep people focused on the longer tasks of tribal life. So as people started to organize into bigger villages, they needed something to keep them working for the longer term future.
Mm-hmm.
So as hierarchies of authority began to build, our brains evolved to hear these auditory hallucinations that would essentially act as the voice of the king or the head of the village. And those expanded into godlike voices, which brought about religion. And
so something is telling you what to do.
Yeah. Yep. And his theory is that the connection between the left and the right brain enabled us to have these sort of auditory hallucinations. And we still have echoes of them in our current behavior. In fact, he calls religion the nostalgia for that sort of world where the gods talk directly to you. And he talks about schizophrenia and how we still don't have a good sense of where that comes from. But he says that our brain is like in some ways kind of tuned to this.
Mm-hmm. We are of two minds.
Yeah.
Literally.
And it's still, and it makes sense. Like the imaginary friend thing, that came to mind for me is like, you know, as you're starting to develop consciousness as a child,
but you don't yet know that you're a separate being that has its own identity and will.
Yeah, and you're developing language around the same time. Like, it's natural for you to develop imaginary friends. You're talking to yourself in your head as other characters. And then eventually it evolves into the sort of the standard narrative. You know, we're constantly talking to ourselves now, but we recognize that voice in our head as us.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, as part of yourself.
We do?
Okay, this podcast is over. I'm going to have an intervention here. You're not talking to Christiane now.
I stand in my kitchen oftentimes, and I have this little, I say, okay, now what are we doing? And I say we. Now what are we doing? But I know it's me.
because you are legion. You are many.
But that idea, imagine if that, you didn't know that was you saying.
Yeah.
So that's his premise, that you get really stressed out. You're trying to put together what you're going to do, and you might walk yourself through your day in your mind.
As almost as a separate coach.
Mm-hmm. But if you don't know that's actually you, that's this bicameral mind.
Right. And I think he points to an experiment, recent in the sense of in the last, 50-ish years, where when they stimulated this part of the brain on the left side of the brain while suppressing other parts of the right side of the brain, the subjects heard sort of these vague authoritarian voices in their head. They just got the feeling of like, I'm in trouble for something. I got to do something. I'm not really sure what it is. And I think that's kind of the seed of the research such as it is that he kind of blew up into this giant thing that encompasses, literature and religion. And I guess the stuff that he especially uses is the Iliad and the Odyssey and the Old Testament to kind of show here's how things developed over the course that these, spoken traditions were turned into written traditions to show how our minds were changing at the same time.
Right. One of his big points that he comes back to over and over is the language used in the Iliad, which would have been a orally passed story
over multiple generations.
Yeah. So not something that's written. So people are telling it and telling it and telling it. And he points out that characters in the story don't reason. They follow directions.
Right. He calls them like noble automatons.
So it's, I don't remember a precise example, but you hear a voice in your head that is God telling you to do a thing. You don't think, hey, I'm mad that guy stole my girlfriend. I am going to set out in my boat and go to war with him.
Right.
You stand there and you feel angry and God tells you, you must go and do the action.
And suddenly, like, bright Apollo or brave Athena or whatever it is sending you on this journey. Whereas in the Odyssey, like, Ulysses is conniving and sneaky and very aware of what he's doing. And the gods are in slightly different roles. In fact, like, he tricks them or he tries to evade them.
Yeah, they have much...
So they're very much outside of his head.
Yeah, everyone has their own character all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And they're characters at play. And while one could say that the Iliad not having... Like, having this non-reasoning... only led by God's voices could just be part of the story. No, this is proof.
No, it's all
this
proof.
This is proof.
It all ties together. Follow the money.
It was
X-Files.
Yes, the bicameral mind does make me think a lot about conspiracy theories.
Yeah. And it kind of makes sense. If I remember right, like, this is around the time that there were, like, what was the book? Behold a Pale Horse, which is like...
Oh, when was
this,
that published?
I think it might have been just after, but that was like the first my big book of conspiracy theories. Mm-hmm. And then there's like Chariot of the Gods that had like the crazy, the crazy theories about alien civilizations. And so I think the time was sort of ripe for these kind of grand unified theories.
It was originally published in 1991.
Oh, okay. That's way later. Well, okay. in my grand unified theory, people always want conspiracy theories that seem to wrap stuff up nicely.
But yeah, that there is this, whether it be God's telling you what to do, or yeah, some other voice that is animating you, you don't have reasoning until what made us start unifying into consciousness. So as a bicameral mind, a split mind, we are of two minds. One of them is telling the other one what to do.
One of them's the boss. One of them's.
And we're misinterpreting that as God or something. Right. And what ends up making us bring them together?
Yeah. And
that's the part I never got.
Right. And I read far enough to kind of, I think.
Language, abstract thought. I didn't.
Yeah. As our need to understand more and more abstract concepts and deal with bigger. I think it's essentially this makes me sound like a tech nerd, but it's a question of scale. Like, as our brains need to think about bigger and bigger things, the unification of the mind comes from that. And so that need for direct sort of control from one part of the brain to the other kind of spreads or diminishes, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to have to admit it. I don't think either of us finished.
No, I couldn't finish because I liked a lot of the concepts and stuff, but I couldn't buy it. I mean, I liked a lot of the storytelling theory backup pieces that he was using, like liked reading about the Iliad and liked reading about different...
Yeah, and I definitely want to go back and read the Odyssey kind of...
Well, it's on our list for the Bowie Book Club.
Yes, and there's a nice new translation, which I just read about in the Atlantic, because I'm a coastal elite. Hail Soros!
You outed yourself.
Sorry.
I couldn't get behind the theory. It was a little like, it seems like you're, I don't know.
And I think, it's still like, I'm definitely going to finish it. Like, I'm really enjoying reading it. But I think it's not so much that I don't totally buy it as, I think he actually says himself, like, he's like, I'm making particularly dense arguments in this chapter. And he says that like every chapter. You know
Which
what I mean?
It's very like pat yourself on the back, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. But that's part of it. It's just like, oh God, stop throwing things at me. Jeez. can we just have a nice light chapter?
I don't know why it... I think it was too simple for me. Like, it's too easy.
It's too straightforward.
There was
but my mind needs that. I can't handle the truth.
There was all these books for a while about creativity and left brain, right brain theory.
Yeah,
and
like
if
drawing
you're
on the right side of the brain.
Yeah. Are you creative or are you more analytical? And these are resident in these different sides of your brain.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot recently about, like, no, we don't just do things with one side of the brain.
Right.
There might be, you know, firings that are more strongly visible on one side, but like language is all over your brain in different places. And
there's lots of evidence for like, if part of the brain is damaged, other parts pick up and redevelop networks. There's that great study of the guy who had like a spike through his head.
Oh God. Yes.
What was his?
Phineas Gage,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, a great Seattle noise rock band, I think. I'll see if I can link to them.
I think it was a bit too simple for me. But what was interesting about it was that sort of literary theory of it. And the book was hugely influential to
a ton
of folks like Neal Stephenson and Philip K. Dick.
Right, with
Snow
Crash. Yeah.
Yeah. If you've seen recently the new Blade Runner, or if you saw the beloved former Blade Runner, a lot of these theories will be familiar.
Those questions of like, what is consciousness? How do you know that you're conscious?
There's a voice telling you what to do, or you are reasoning from your own sense of identity and awareness.
And how do you know the difference?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how do we know? So
that was
the Westworld connection that you said, you mentioned that there was an episode called bicameral mind.
Yeah, like they just said, we're taking it directly
from
this book. They might well just call the episode Julian Jaynes.
But the whole series was really modeled on this book.
And there's a great video on YouTube that you should turn this off.
Yeah, just listen to that.
Go watch it.
It'll explain the book much more clearly.
It's actually really good and really snarky too. But it talks about in the context of Westworld, but it actually does explain the book really well.
If Jiminy Cricket was all powerful, your conscious mind was the all powerful Jiminy Cricket.
And I think, what does he also say? Why did you do that? Well, I guess I was feeling murdery.
But I can't reason for myself. I have no consciousness of my own. Right. But I haven't actually seen Westworld.
No, neither have I. So I'm down to at least watch that episode to see, to see if the connection kind of pops out.
The other connection I made, which I can't talk about because it would spoil everything for Greg, but the Duncan Jones, David Bowie's son, made a film called Moon. And there are parts of this theory of bicameral mind and the development of consciousness or the recognition of one's consciousness, problematically so, that show up in that film. But I can't say.
I'll take my headphones off so I can't hear you.
But I'm sitting in this room. You would hear me.
Oh. Okay.
You have to go hide in the closet or something.
I'll step out for a minute. I'll come right back.
There's this one scene.
Hey, listener, come closer.
Shh, don't tell Greg.
But it's interesting that his son makes a movie that talks about the bicameral mind, which, the Jaynes relates to schizophrenia. There's definitely a family connection here.
Yeah. When we were talking about why David Bowie would have liked this book, I think it was, again, another example of it was a big seller. Everyone was reading it.
And it was Bowie influencing loved a cockamamie theory as much as anyone else.
As we've seen from some of the books we've read in the past. And it influenced a lot of other creative folks and his family history of schizophrenia.
Right, which goes a lot deeper than I had known, because I knew about his half brother, but it sounds like it was several generations of people.
Yeah, it was on his mom's side. So his half brother Terry was hospitalized for paranoid schizophrenia. His mother had experiences as well. His aunt Nora had a lobotomy. His aunt Una died in her 30s from complications. Like, she was schizophrenic. She was in a mental hospital. I think she had electroshock treatments.
Yeah.
There was a bunch of folks from his mother's side. And there was a bunch of things I saw in, I guess, that new book I gave you, the David Bowie, A Life.
Oh, yeah. I'm really psyched to read that. It's kind of like the oral history sort of thing.
Yeah. That has mentions about David Bowie talking about his fear of sort of caving in as well to this mental illness that he was an inheritor of, he believed. He told a friend or a lover of his that he wouldn't take LSD because of the fear of losing control to a psychedelic experience would sort of trigger him into this dark mental space. And LSD was actually talked about in, I can't remember, maybe it was in that Westworld video as an example of that bicameral mind.
Yeah. And why, I think that, the video says that this book came around at a time where people were just coming down off of their acid trip in the 60s. So
and then they could think about
what just happened
to
me?
What was that? Was that God talking to me?
Right,
or was
right.
that just my brain stopped communicating to itself?
Yeah. Like, there's just a hitch between the two sides.
Yeah. I stuck this big tab of acid between it.
Right. And that's something that is sort of fascinating and terrifying for me, is just how kind of fragile our sense of self actually is. And through hallucinogenic drugs and stuff, you kind of deliberately or for positive or negative effects, you knock it off course and kind of, let's see what happens, And I can see why Bowie was really terrified of that, considering his history.
Yeah. And so maybe
he was cool with all sorts of other drugs.
I know, you're like, I'll burn a hole in my nose with cocaine.
Yeah. But that's okay.
But yeah, so maybe Julian Jaynes was not only an interesting jumping off point for creative, you know, imaginings, but also that it gave some context to schizophrenia as a historic development process in humans. There's a passage in a later chapter of the book that's just called Schizophrenia, where Julian Jaynes talks about bicameralism and schizophrenia. And he says, what we now call schizophrenia then begins in human history as a relationship to the divine, and only around 400 BC comes to be regarded as the incapacitating illness we know today. This development is difficult to understand apart from the theory of a life, of a change in mentality, which this essay is about. So that we wouldn't have seen schizophrenia as anything other than what we were all experiencing, and then development allowed some of us consciousness and some of us not. That's where things get a little
weird. Yeah, and it's interesting to kind of, you know, in our current culture, we see people who are mentally ill as disabled, mm-hmm. whereas it seems like he's kind of trying to say that what we consider normal consciousness is just a different flavor of the same thing. It's mm-hmm. not necessarily better. I haven't read that part of the book, so I guess I shouldn't really say.
So it's more, they are more bicameral than we are. And now we're moving towards tricameral or something, right? Like, would that work that way?
What, between like,
Our cell phones and our right and left brain.
So there'll be a point where you insert your phone into your skull a toaster?
Like right between the two, and then you're like, oh, now I can see everything.
Like a fin.
Like acid.
Okay, so we're trademarking that. That's our thing. Don't anyone take it. It's our intellectual property.
But there was a great article. Sorry to take away your opportunity to trademark that.
The less we talk about that, the better. We got to keep that secret.
But there was an article called AI is Changing Our Brains that was, what is it, fast code design? And it was about how we have
offloaded.
Offloaded parts of our identity and reasoning and consciousness onto our electronic devices. For instance, why your friend Wikipedia has become so close.
You know, we're on a first name basis. And he asks me for money all the time. And I'm kind of a jerky friend because I actually don't pay up that often.
But that would end up being an object, like a God voice that's telling us what to do and what our reasoning is.
I think everyone knows that feeling of your phone buzzing in your pocket.
You're like, go now, I must go.
I've got something to do.
I must look.
I'm in trouble for something. And I imagine in a sort of like, dude, wow, speculation. Like we were talking earlier about like, what if that sort of external mind that you have starts to change in a way that you don't recognize as yourself, or starts to present a picture of yourself to you that you don't recognize, or that doesn't sort of meet who you think you are.
Well,
like what if Amazon started recommending like completely different things to you? Like, I guess you would see it as a glitch in their system, but what if it actually like got to the point where it changes how you think about yourself, or at least causes tension?
But I think that if you are not giving in to the development, then you're viewing it as a discrepancy. But in this way of like, if Julian Jaynes is correct and you were coming from a place where you had no sense of who you are and what you wanted, the voices of gods told you what to do.
Yeah.
Then you became aware of who you are and what you wanted and that you were conscious of things. So to return to it or to evolve into this next tricameral, you would just
trademark.
TM. You would just give up that as well. Then you would be saying like, yes, I just watched this thing and you are telling me what to watch next. And you are telling me that I must answer something. I must enter a password. I must do a,
it. It's almost a diminishment of consciousness because you become less intentional.
Right. So it's like a cycle back. Dude.
It's so trippy.
It's because she's like, pour another coffee and light another cigarette.
Yeah, it's so freaky. because my parents actually listen to this, we are not smoking weed.
But we sound like we are because
we totally do.
This whole book sounds like that.
Right. Actually, reading this was genuinely like just taking a couple of bong rips. Put it on Koya Nakatsi again. Awesome.
You could totally sync it up with that movie. You just push play right when the opening credits start.
Okay, so you have to read this book while listening to
Westworld
and listening to Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon.
But you have to start them all at the same time.
Yeah, and you'll finish the book about 2 years later.
So what song did we choose?
So we ended up landing on All the Mad Men from
Man Who Sold the World,
which is a go-to Bowie record. Mm-hmm. And it seems a little bit on the nose, but after reading Pushing Ahead of the Dame about it, which we do for every episode because it's the best side ever. It fit, I think.
Maybe too well.
But just like this book, it wraps up really neatly.
Real neat, tidy bow. Yeah, there's a interview from 1971, and Bowie said, quote, the guy in the story, about the song,
yeah.
The guy in the story has been placed in a mental institution, and there are a number of people in that institution being released each week that are his friends. Now, they've said that he can leave as well, but he wants to stay there. Because he gets a lot more enjoyment out of staying there with the people he considers sane. He doesn't want to go through the psychic compromises imposed on him by the outer world. It's my brother, because that's where he's at.
Yeah, and you can kind of hear from that how much that affects him. And there's a couple other songs, like the Bewley Brothers that we did for Wonder Boys. I think we talked about that a little bit, but it's interesting to see how much of an influence that had on his work. And it kind of does, you know, like you said, it kind of does fit really neatly into this book. So what do we have coming up next?
We have George Orwell.
Oh, yeah. Okay. We switched it around. We cast the lots, we rolled the dice, we looked at numbers.
Yeah, it was a very scientific process.
Yes, yeah, of course. Very Jamesian.
Yes. In our methods. We let the voice of the gods speak to us and tell us what to read.
and we came up with George Orwell's book of essays, Inside the Whale.
Which is actually out of print. That particular edition, it's a collection of, I think it's about four essays in there. So we're just going to read those four essays, whether they come in that particular edition or not.
we'll figure it out. Yeah. And we'll put the links on the website. Mm-hmm. And I'll put the show notes up. And you can find us at...
Of course, BowieBookClub.com.
Yes.
Or on Twitter at BowieBookPod. Facebook at BowieBookClubPodcast. And Instagram at Bowie Book Club.
And this episode will probably be out before then, but we're going to hang out at PodCon in Seattle.
Yeah.
On the weekend of the 8th.
Yep. December 8th and 9th, I think.
Yep. So if you're in Seattle and you're going to that, it'd be great to meet up with you.
Yeah.
If you're not in Seattle or you're not going to that, you can still rate and review us on the Apple Podcast Store. and you can talk to us on our Facebook page.
Yep.
You can give us suggestions. You can pretend to be the left side of our brain telling us
tell
what
us
to
what
do.
To do.
And we'll totally do it. We're so
bicameral.
Okay, I'm gonna play the song now. So thank you very much. I've been Greg.
I've been Christiane. See you next time.
Bye.